This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm Rod McKay.
The newly promoted Rod McKay, who now is our team leader of our Vancouver office and is sitting in to join not only as the co-host today, but also as our guest to unpack what we call a 1031 exchange. Enjoy, guys. This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial, John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
Mark your calendar.
That's right, Matt, because Atlin's grand opening is happening Saturday, September 13th from 12 to 5 p.m. at Zentera Sales Gallery in South Surrey at 2411 160th Street.
Join us for refreshments, food, and live entertainment. And Adam, the Beat 94.5 is going to be live on location.
Atlin is Zentera's newest condo community coming to West Clayton and features studio to three-bedroom homes, starting from just $325,000 and only a 10-minute walk to the new SkyTrain station.
Buy now and get over $50,000 in inclusions. Air conditioning, vinyl flooring upgrade, built-in closet organizers, Samsung appliances with a gas range, washer, dryer, storage locker, and more.
Atlin offers amazing amenities with over 30,000 square feet of outdoor space, including three children's playgrounds, plus a rooftop patio, a gym, co-working space, party room, games room, and even an on-site daycare with priority access for residents.
Just 10% down secures your home with move-in in 2028.
Come down to the Presentation Center on Saturday, September 13th to tour the sales gallery and show home to see what all the hype is about with your chance to secure your own home at Atlin.
Visit atlincondos.ca for more details. That's atlincondos.ca for more details.
Rod, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks, Corey. How are you doing?
Good, good. Things are busy. We were talking in sales meetings last week that we've had five consecutive weeks of transactions over the previous week's transactions. So things feel like they're trending in the right direction. I think with the federal election behind us now, regardless to the outcome of what people were hoping for or not hoping for, I do feel like people are kind of like, we just got to get up and go. Now, I'm not saying there's like a cascading effect of people jumping in the pool, but it feels like things are getting busier. What are you seeing, Rod?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think that people were certainly waiting for the results of the election. Now that they're in, it's more or less back to business for people. They wanted to have some level of certainty. Now that we've got that, seeing things from more of a bird's eye view perspective with the new role as team lead, certainly more transactions are coming through. And the reality is it's just a bit harder to get those transactions through. So on from the broker side of things, we're having to work quite a bit harder to get the same amount of deals through, but certainly opportunity out there for people that are looking for it.
I think the key thing is what you mentioned there, deals are coming through and deals are getting done. Now, people are having to work harder, maybe get a little more creative to get the deals done. But the fact that deals are still getting done is a great sign. Because if we go back like a year ago, when we had the high interest, there was a lot of anticipation and hype leading into 2025. This time last year, we might not have been saying the deals were getting done. There was interest and there was paper going around, but things maybe weren't getting over the line the same we're finding in 2025. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. And I think we've always been busy on the leasing side of things. Thankfully, we've got that aspect to our business. But what we're seeing on sales, it's been fairly slow for the past couple of years. And a lot of the buyers that we've been working with, they just weren't seeing the value with where the vendor expectations were. We're in an environment now where it seems like vendor expectations are coming off a bit. Interest rates are fairly low. The buyers that have been looking, they're still around. They're just looking for the right deal. And we're seeing those deals come through now. Talking to some brokers in our office, they've been working with investors for a number of years where they've constantly been sending them stuff, but it's like, nope, not the right opportunity. This is priced too high. Now those deals are coming through where the vendor expectations are coming to a bit more of a realistic level. So yeah, we're certainly seeing more transactions come through that way on the sales side of things.
Well, a key thing you said there was the vendor's expectations, because I think a lot of people, regardless to what side of the fence you fall on, commercial or residential, I think a lot of people are still holding out for 2021 pricing.
Yeah.
And now people are finding out that things maybe aren't going to achieve those numbers. The lending world isn't the same. The economy isn't the same. Mm-hmm. The world isn't the same. So I think people are having more realistic expectations, as you mentioned there. That I think is really helping get things to move a little bit forward and at least a little bit faster, because my house isn't worth $2 million. I realize my house is 1.65 and that's what my house is going to be worth. And if you look at the interest rates now and we go back to like pre-pandemic levels, pre-pandemic, the interest rates weren't terribly far off from where we are. Obviously, there's a lot made in the media, but you're looking at commercial rates in the mid to high fours on a 5-year fix. And that was where we saw things like pre-pandemic. So it's not like they're going to come down dramatically from where they are unless the bottom of the economy falls out or a massive recession kicks in. Then that would force the Bank of Canada lower rates at a faster. I do think they're going to come down, but I don't think they're going to come down a considerable amount that holding out on a good deal that happens today, that 10 or 20 basis points isn't going to probably affect it a whole lot. If you do have the opportunity to make a deal now and it makes financial sense to do so, it may be your time to pull the trigger.
Absolutely. And I think if you look at, you know, like you said, where rates were in 2019 pre-pandemic, pretty similar to the rates that we're seeing today. And I remember, Corey, you and I working together on deals in Yaletown where we were selling investment retail strata units at 3% cap rates. Well, we're basically at the same interest rates, but you're, instead of a 3% cap rate, you're getting close to a 5% cap rate.
In some cases, yeah.
Same property,
you're so. Right. And I think, and that's one thing too, is cap compression is a real thing. And we saw it happen before in the past. And that doesn't have to be driven by interest rates. That can be driven by demand. And if more people come into the table and you can find something at a 4, 4.5, or a 5 cap today, and that gets compressed by 50 basis points or 100 basis points, 5 to a 4 is 20% on the same income. So there is that opportunity. That cap compression could very well happen. Things are trending in the right direction. We're busier. It feels like everyone out there is getting busier. Talking to people on the residential side, it seems like stuff is finally moving again. Hopefully it's a sign of people are getting off their butts back into the real estate business now because we got the federal election behind us. But speaking of the federal election, Rod, we obviously don't share our political views on this show.
We always share our political views on this show.
Is a lot of people in the real estate side of the business probably were really pushing for a conservative party. And I think the overall sentiment I'm hearing is new leader, same cast of characters. Let's see what happens. And I don't think people are completely convinced that Carney is going to be dramatically different than Trudeau, and time will tell, although I think a lot of his views can be different. How much comes into play and how quickly? So I think there's a kind of a little bit of wait and see moment that's happening right now. Although we are seeing things pick up, which is a good sign. If we may potentially have had a change in government, maybe there'd be a little bit more optimism. We might've seen things pick up a little bit faster, hard to say. But one thing we wanted to talk about today that is something that's probably needed in this country, and they have it in America, is what they call a 1031 exchange. So you're the expert on this, Rod. You're going to dive in deep, but I'm going to give the Coles Notes version of what a 1031 exchange is. And so, for example, as me as a Canadian, if I were to buy an investment property in the States, whether it be residential or commercial, and I sell my investment property in the States, I believe I am subject to about 20% capital gains, I think is what it is on the total gain. Now, we'll have to fact check that, but I think it's around 20% of the total gain is my exposure.
Roughly. I mean, it would depend on what your personal tax bracket is. You're getting paid, you're getting taxed on 50% of the total gain. And then from there, they look at your tax bracket. So let's call it 20%. I would say that's a good number.
So as a Canadian buying in America and I sell an investment property, I might pay 20% capital gains tax on the total gain of the asset. But then also, I have the opportunity for what they call a 1031 exchange. And what a 1031 exchange is if I repurpose the proceeds of that sale into a similar type asset within a similar timelines, I can actually defer the capital gains to a later date. In Canada, as a Canadian, if I buy an investment property and sell it, I'm going to probably end up paying, under the current inclusion rates, approximately 25% on the total gain. First 50% is tax-free. The second 50% is taxable up to about 52%, I think. And I think there's a lot of personal stuff that has to go in to determine what that number is. But let's call it 25%. And I don't have the opportunity for a 1031 exchange. So I've got no motivation to reinvest the proceeds back into real estate in this example, but back into Canada. That money can go wherever it wants versus the 1031 exchange in America. I then sell my property in America. I have incentive to reinvest it under the 1031 exchange back into America, but also I can now defer those capital gains versus Canada. I have to pay the capital gains regardless, and there's no incentive for me to reinvest it after. It's kind of that my money can go where it goes. So Rod, one thing the Conservative Party had pitched that they said they were going to do was introduce a 1031 exchange in Canada. And that's from a real estate standpoint, I think would unlock inventory that we've never seen before. I'm not saying prices would go up immediately, but I'm saying every single listing pitch, most likely a commercial broker deals with the question when the seller says, what is my capital gains? And that influences their decision whether they want to sell or not sell.
Absolutely. And I think the key here is that it's a tax deferral, not forgiveness. Yeah. So I think a lot of people, when this kind of things gets pitched by the Conservative government, it's like, okay, well, here's another policy that's only going to benefit the rich and it helps the rich get richer. Well, it's a tax deferral, not forgiveness. So eventually you will pay the gain once the asset gets sold. If you don't trade up into a similar type asset within a certain time frame, you do still pay the tax on that.
And I think when you, there's a lot, before we get into what a 1031 exchange is, there's a lot of arguments can be made on either side of the fence. And I know one thing, especially in Canada, the argument is if I have an investment condo and I sell that investment condo under a 1031 exchange, I could defer that capital gains by reinvesting the proceeds into another condo. And one argument that can be made is if there's more investors now looking for investments in Canada, that's going to put further crunch on the real estate market for buyers who are looking to get in, maybe first-time home buyers or people looking to buy up into the market, because there's more incentive now for people to invest in real estate and in Canada. That may make more demand for that product, thus pushing up prices, pushing up unaffordability, which is probably a fair argument. A counterpoint to that argument could be, let's say, for example, Rod, me and you, we own this great industrial complex and we've had it for 20 years in the families. Well, and let's say now the new OCPs come in and that industrial part can now become 1,200 condos over the 2-acre site. But potentially, we don't sell that industrial park because we don't want to pay capital gains. So if we're not willing to part with that industrial park, those 1,200 homes aren't going to get developed. So a 1031 exchange in that situation could be the difference between helping somebody, you know, sell the asset to reinvest the proceeds that would then create the 1,200 homes that are needed versus sitting on the asset, not selling it to a developer because they want to pay capital gains. Let's dig into, Rod, what is a 1031 exchange? And I know there is groups that are lobbying for this with the Liberals. I personally think it would be a very advantageous thing to do. And I think it would be incentivizing a lot of people to invest into Canada. But Rod, what is a 1031 exchange?
Yeah, let's dive into it. So 1031 exchange in the United States, it's a powerful tax deferral tool. It's a concept of the U.S. Internal Revenue Code, Section 1031. So if we did something similar in Canada, it would be called something different because this is a direct section from their Internal Revenue Code. So essentially what it does, it allows investors to defer paying capital gains tax when they sell an investment for business use property. And that's important. You can't use it for your principal residence. And this is provided that they reinvest the proceeds into, like you said, a similar like-kind property. So So there's a few requirements of the 1031 exchange. So properties must be for investment or business use. Like I said, not personal residences. The new property must be identified within 45 days. The purchase must close within 180 days of the original sale. So you've essentially got 6 months to close onto the next property of equal or greater value. And then a qualified intermediary is going to hold on to the funds during the transition. So you don't actually get access to those funds if you're applying for a 1031 exchange share. So maybe we'll just jump into a hypothetical example. And I think
before we get into that, this is just how you learn something new every day. I was always trying to figure out what the 1031 actually represented. I'm trying to figure out, maybe is it dates? Is it 10 months, 31 days? Like, what does it represent? It's the tax code.
Tax code.
Nothing to do with what I thought it was.
Section 1031.
Learn something new every day. All right, Rod, keep going.
Yeah, so hypothetical example. And I think if you look at a lot of people that maybe aren't so for this, they think it's really just the rich that are deferring tax or being forgiven tax. They'll make the argument that this is really just here to help the ultra rich, but that's certainly not true. I think in a lot of cases, we work with a lot of owner occupiers for small business that are purchasing commercial properties for their own business. And as they grow and their revenue increases, they may look to grow their operations by purchasing larger properties. And this is a situation where the 1031 exchange, if you had something similar in Canada, could really help these businesses. So let's say you have an investor, an owner-occupier in East Vancouver, and they're looking to sell their commercial property. So they bought it for $1 million. The selling price is going to be $1.8 million. The capital improvements that they put into the property are $100,000, let's say. And for them to dispose of the property, you've got to pay legal fees, taxes, and then, of course, realtor commissions. Let's say that's $50,000. So the capital gain in this scenario, you're going to be, it's $1.7 million in net proceeds minus the $1.1 million. You got $650,000 in gains. Now, if 50% of the gain is taxable, you've got $325,000 that's being taxable in this scenario. So assuming a 48% marginal tax rate, you've got $156,000 in taxes owed, which leaves the business owner with about $1.6 million to reinvest. Now, if you were able to use the 1031 exchange, instead of that $1.6 million, you'd have $1.75 million. And why this is important is that would be an extra $150,000 that this business owner could put into the proceeds of their next business, which in turn could help them buy a bigger property, hire more staff, and in turn would help stimulate the economy.
I'm trying to see the downside here. Where is the downside in introducing a program like this, besides the fact that the federal government isn't getting their hand in your pocket after the sale? They're having to wait for that deferral down the road, but you're continuing to invest the money in this country.
So yeah, there's certainly some pros and cons from the public policy perspective. From an investor side, some of the pros are that it keeps more money in play for scaling their business, as we just discussed. It encourages strategic reinvestment into our own domestic economy, which is really important. We don't want to see a large amount of capital leaving our country. And it also reduces that lock-in effect where you've got property owners that are just holding underperforming properties just to avoid paying taxes. Now, in terms of some of the cons from a public policy side of things, you've obviously got the delay in government tax revenue. So that's income that would be going towards tax gets delayed. Potentially, people say that it could benefit wealthy investors disproportionately. And there's also the potential for increased speculation if it's not properly managed. But some of the pros is, you know, you still collect taxes eventually, often on larger gains. And also, it may spur job creation and improve asset productivity. So there certainly are some benefits. Now, in terms of the government's perspective, why would the government want to allow this? Because in the scenario that we just talked about, they just missed out on $150,000 in tax revenues. Why is this something that the government would even consider? Because we know that the Liberal government, of course, is very pro-tax. So a few reasons here. It stimulates economic activity. It really encourages the buying, selling, renovating, and development. So all of this helps create jobs. It does generate other tax revenues. So you've got increased use of brokers, contractors, legal and accounting services. This all leads to more GST, property transfer tax, and income tax collected on this. So there still is kind of some trickle-down tax that they will get, even though they don't get it directly from the sale of the property. Because this sale goes through, there are other taxes they are collecting than they wouldn't have had the sale not gone through. It encourages higher and better use for real estate. The real estate is used more productively when owners aren't disincentivized to sell. You might have property owners that have been holding on to buildings for 40 years. That's multiple generations. And maybe their money is better used in another asset. And you know, they haven't been keeping up the quality of this current asset versus if you're able to put it on the market, defer the capital gains, then the new buyer comes in and they invest more money into improving the asset, just leading to better real estate assets across the country. And then lastly, it supports small businesses. So it helps owners upgrade or relocate operations without triggering large immediate tax burdens.
That's a lot of information. And right now, I'm really thankful that we have the accounting and legal disclaimer that goes out before the podcast comes with it. Because I can just imagine the phone calls I'm going to get my office from lawyers saying, well, you guys are providing all this accounting advice. So first off, we're not providing any accounting advice. We're breaking down what a 1031 exchange is and what the opportunity could or may not be with regards to it. Rod, I think there's so many great points there that you touched on that a lot of people look at it purely from a top level thing. But when you start breaking it down, again, I made a comment earlier, where's the downside? The more you talk, the less downside I think there is.
Well, and we might be a little bit biased on this podcast here, Corey, because we would certainly stand to benefit from the 1031 exchange type policy. And as you mentioned, yes, no, this is not tax or accounting advice. I think we've already spit out about three different potential tax brackets that it could be under. So please take this with a grain of salt. It's more of a general guidance.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing too that we talked earlier, and I made a comment about like the development land not getting developed. You made a great point there. There's property that's probably been in families for generations that the capital gains is really prohibiting them to sell the assets. So if I have a piece of property, let's say argument is there's a $10 million capital gain there, we might pay $2.5 million under the current inclusion rates, maybe higher under the proposed increased inclusion rates that Trudeau's administration proposed, which both liberals and the conservatives said we're going to scrap that increased capital gain. So hopefully they live up to that. So that $2.5 million in taxes could prohibit that site property from being sold versus I sell it, I take all $10 million, I leverage that at approximately 65% loan to value. I may be able to leverage that $10 million up to about $30 million potentially in a new asset. And now you're opening up a lot of lines for transactions to happen, land to get repurposed, buildings to get repurposed that otherwise maybe isn't happening because of the capital gains and not having a program similar to the American 1031 exchange.
Well, I'll give you a real world example of a transaction that we're currently working on. It's for roughly a 100,000 square foot industrial building, which is currently vacant. It's sitting vacant, so there's no jobs being used for that 100,000 square foot building. We've got a client that is looking to purchase it for their own business use. And the owner of the property, we're having challenges bridging the gap because he's going to have to pay probably a $7 million capital gain on it.
$7 million.
So the capital gain is much higher, but the taxes that he would owe just would roughly be about $7 million.
So you can make the assumption that we're going to multiply that by four. You're looking at a $28 million profit, of which potentially $7 million of the $28 million could be subject to capital gains.
Absolutely. And so this is an asset, as I mentioned, that's sitting vacant. It's not creating any jobs. We've got a client that's put in a very good offer, but we're fairly far apart. Due in no small part to the capital gains tax that this vendor would have to pay on the property. Now, if that wasn't there, I think that we'd be much more able to bridge the gap. And what happens when that happens? Create a lot more jobs, great for the economy. That 100,000 square foot building that's sitting vacant is much more productive when you have an owner-operator running their business out of there.
I'm going to throw this out there. If we had a 1031 exchange that potentially allowed for capital gains to be deferred, does that help with pricing, making some things maybe slightly more affordable because the vendors aren't now taking a capital gain into their decision-making on the vendor side?
Absolutely. And the reason is, even if you pay the tax eventually, you have to look at the compounding effect. That's where this really comes into play. If every single time you sell an asset, you have to pay your tax, well, you're not really benefiting from the compound interest effect that you could have gotten had you not had to pay that tax. So it's extremely beneficial if you can defer the capital gains.
See, I'm going to give you an example of how government tax relief can really, really be a huge benefit. If you're watching the Stanley Cup playoffs right now, Rantanen got traded from Colorado to Carolina, I guess. Nobody thought before that trade would happen, like, hey, should we talk to him if he wants to sign? I think that would be a logical question, which obviously didn't happen. He gets to Carolina and pretty much tells him, I'm not going to sign here. So they have to send him to Dallas. A tax with a city or a state with no sales tax, no tax. And I read something, and I don't know how true this is, that he really wanted $13 million, but Dallas drew a hard line at 12 saying, hey, there's no state tax here. Your $12 million here is a lot more than 13 in a lot of other cities.
Especially California.
Rantanen gets, like, I don't know, 5 goals in the last 2 games against Colorado, knocks them out, goes on to the current series, gets a hat trick first game, score the next game. Like, if Dallas wins the cup, they only win the cup because there's no state tax.
No state tax, yeah.
If there's state tax, he wants 13, he doesn't sign, and they might have shipped them again, nor he probably wouldn't even ended up in Dallas.
So are you saying the Vancouver Canucks could have won the Stanley Cup playoffs this year if we had a 1031 exchange or something similar?
I'm saying, you know what? Yeah, let's look at it this way. So the family that owns the Canucks, they're in the real estate business,
mm-hmm.
right?
Very much so.
Right? They potentially might sell more assets, generate more revenue to reinvest and grow.
Wow.
We might sign Quinn Hughes. The 1031 exchange could save our franchise.
So the Aquilinis are being handcuffed and the Vancouver Canucks would be performing better if we had a better tax code.
I'm not saying that, but I'm saying if there was no provincial tax in here, maybe Talkett stays.
I like all of these suggestions here.
So not only could the 1031 exchange program stimulate the real estate market and open up inventory and create more homes, it could also save Quinn Hughes staying with the Canucks.
And you know what happens when the Canucks are doing better when they're in the playoffs?
Every restaurant's packed.
It's insane the amount of revenue that it brings.
We're generating tens of millions of dollars in economic in the city of Vancouver every time it goes. The spinoff effect of this 1031 program could save the franchise, could save all the franchises in Canada, for all we know.
You know, I hadn't thought about it this way. And if we're looking at it from Canada's perspective, yeah. when was the last time that Canada brought home the cup?
I'm going to go 93, Montreal.
Okay, so if it's been over 30 years,
yeah.
been over 30 years, do you think that it might have something to do with the tax code? I didn't know we were going to go here today, Corey.
Could you imagine if Connor McDavid goes and signs in the States because he can invest his money differently down there for a 1031 exchange?
For all we know, it might happen.
Like, it's amazing. The NHL in Canada could be jeopardized here if we don't consider a 1031 exchange, it sounds like. The other thing, too, I think the NHL has to, and this, now we're going left field here. But the other thing I think the NHL is going to have to figure out, too, is the salary cap. Because if I'm a Canadian team, and let's say I'm Vancouver, and I'm bringing in Canadian dollars through my gate, and granted, they get some revenue in America, but I'm bringing a majority of my Canadian dollars, majority of my revenue through my gate is Canadian. I'm paying out in American, so I got a dollar differential I'm handicapped at before I start. Now I got a salary cap that's going to go up north of $100 million probably for the foreseeable future. And I've got, and in Canada, we have some of the highest taxes. How would I attract a guy like Rantanen to Vancouver with our tax situation in Canada? Me as an owner paying American dollars yet collecting some revenue in Canadian, I might not even be able to afford the guy. We got to create some stabilization here for Canadian teams. If I'm an NHL player, do I want to go play, with all due respect, in Winnipeg at minus 150 degrees, where I have to dig a hole to get to my car in the wintertime? And do I want to go play there and pay Canadian taxes? Or do I want to go sit in South Beach in Florida or Fort Lauderdale, pay no state tax? I can pretty much go anywhere I want because nobody knows who I am. And I sit in my pool on the ocean when I'm not practicing.
And they seem to make the playoffs every year down there.
I wonder why. All right. Now that we're getting way off topic there, Rod, anything else you want to add to like what a 1031 exchange is? I think we've uncovered a lot today. We've really broken it down. Why we wanted to kind of do this episode is it was one thing that that seemed like it made a lot of steam, at least on the commercial side of things, when the Conservative Party announced it. And now you got a lot of groups that are kind of really campaigning for this. Now the Liberals are in a minority position about potentially the benefits this could be, the opportunities it could create. So we think, you know, it would be something great. I do think it does create some housing opportunities because I do think a lot of the land that is getting rezoned or getting upzoned through OCPs, that you are sometimes finding people don't want to sell their development land to developers because of capital gains.
Yeah. I mean, I guess just to recap, at its core, a 1031 exchange isn't about avoiding tax. It's about deferring it so that investors can build more productive portfolios and help them grow wealth more efficiently while continuing to generate economic activity. And we all know that this country really needs to spur economic activity. And we think that this is a policy that would certainly help do that. Now, Canada obviously doesn't have this mechanism today, but by introducing a version of it, could be a win-win when structured thoughtfully.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Rod, we had you on the program lots. You're a recurring guest. If we had a jacket to give you, like at SNL, when you get to 5 episodes, we'd give you a jacket. You're well beyond 5 here. We do have a 6-pack that we would like to ask. First question out of the gate. Does Quinn Hughes stay with the Vancouver Canucks post-contract?
I'm going to go ahead and say yes, because I'm generally an optimist. So I'd hate to see him go.
1031 exchange will help that. if money wasn't an option and you could have any car in the world, what car are you taking down?
So to be honest, I'm really not a big car guy. I'm kind of more about functionality. I'm over, like, I don't need a supercar or anything like that. Something very simple, like a nice Toyota Land Cruiser. The new Land Cruisers that are out, or even the more luxury versions, the Lexus, I think it's GX something. I like the looks of those cars, and I like to go camping and hit the service roads in the summertime. So something like that.
Good call.
Yeah.
What's your over-under, Carney, get some sort of trade agreement in place with our good friend, Mr. Trump, down south before the end of August?
Well, I'd say it probably doesn't happen. Although I see that they continue to keep recounting votes. The Liberals are now 2 away from a majority. So if they keep recounting, he might have a majority. And
it's almost like if a cop drives behind you long enough, they'll find a reason to pull you over. If we just keep recounting for long enough, we might find 2 more seats.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Does the second half of 2025 perform better than the first half of 2025 in the commercial real estate realm?
Yes, but I would say it'll be fairly marginal. I think people will be fairly strategic about their investments. It's when people are underwriting properties, they're going to take a good, hard, long look at it. And the reality is that, we're going to see more and more inventory. So it'll be a great buyer's market.
If I grabbed your phone right now and logged into your Spotify, what song would I find, or songs would I find?
That's a good question. I'm kind of all over the place. We could look at it right now.
I did not picture you for as a Backstreet Boy guy, but that's interesting. Backstreet Boys, 98 Degrees, and NSYNC. Wow, I did not anticipate that.
You know what I've been listening to a lot lately is Capital Cities. They were at Sasquatch that I went to probably over a decade ago, discovered them, and just rediscovered them again.
Nice. No Nickelback on there, just checking.
This is the most recent stuff.
Most recent, gotcha.
No, Nickelback always has a time and a place, especially coming back from those long road trips, or you're coming back from a long day hiking. It's when you're sitting in traffic waiting for the Lionsgate Bridge, always turn that on to get the energy going up.
If I were to come to your house right now, what are you binge watching? Amazon,
no,
Amazon, Netflix. What are you watching?
I don't really watch that much TV anymore. There doesn't seem to be much time, but it's the most comforting thing that's always on at our place is The Office. It's on repeat. We've probably been through it 20 times. Not even kidding.
I don't think I've physically laughed so hard in my life as the potato gun episode. I've never laughed to the point my body hurt. And I remember watching that the first time it came out, and I couldn't physically control myself with the potato gun episode. It was so funny.
It's a great series.
Bonus question, last one up here. Did Canucks figure it out for next year and make the playoffs?
Well, I wish they hadn't gotten rid of Tockett. I really liked him.
Yeah, well, I don't think
what was the story? They didn't get rid of him. They parted ways. They should have done more.
I think they had like a team option, but I don't think they wanted to exercise it because I think they felt like he didn't want to be here. And that's probably an awkward position for both sides. So I think it was more or less like, hey, we're not going to exercise our option in good faith. In exchange, we're really hoping you're going to stay.
Yeah, it's challenging. Last year we obviously had a better than expected season. I think expectations as a result of that were quite high going into this year. And a bit of a disappointment whether or not next year gets any better. I suppose time will tell.
How long before they have to buy out Pettersson?
You're asking me all these hard questions, Corey.
That's not a hard one. I'm going to give it 2 years. Two years, and they're going to have to make some tough decisions. But maybe there's a 1031 exchange for buyouts for players.
We can
like defer his salary down the road. Give me a couple buckets of pucks.
There might be something to that.
All right, Rod, how can everyone get a hold of you and find out more what you guys are doing at William Wright Commercial's Vancouver office and all the great stuff going on in the market?
Absolutely. Yeah. So you can check us out at williamwright.ca. We've got all of our new lists, all of our listings on there. You can find out what we're doing there. We've got an agent section so you can view all of our agents, give them a call, see what's going on. To reach out to me personally, just give me a call on my cell, 604-763-5510, or email me at roderick@williamwright.ca.
Amazing, Rod. Thank you once again for joining us and sort of unpacking what a potential 1031 exchange would look like if we were into something in Canada. Thanks, Rod. Take care.
Thanks, Corey.
Subscribe today.